starting in the date, Monday, March 22nd, 2004. Members present, Representative Crawford, Lynn, Gatto, myself, Dr. Guttenberg. Today's schedule, we'll have House Bill 379, and I think I'm going to take one bill off. Senate Bill 291, and I'm going in new bills, protocols, new bills first. House Bill 449, ADA bonds for gas public utilities. Then we'll bring House Bill 453 up and finish debate on that. And then House Bill 490, I don't think we can make it in time. There's a majority caucus at 5, so just because it's last on the list, I'm going to hold that, and we'll bring it up, I promise, on Wednesday. So if there's anyone here for House Bill 490, Employment Security Act amendments, no need to stay, because we cannot get to it in an hour and a half, and we'll have it Wednesday. So we'll go first to House Bill 379, Office of Citizenship Assistance, and that is Representative Wyrock's bill, and pretty straightforward, but we'll have him. Thanks. Sorry to make you wait last time and bump you. The floor is yours.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Wyrock, representative from House District 4. House Bill 379 would establish an Office of Citizenship Assistance in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. This bill had been introduced in a prior legislative session in the Senate by Senator Pete Kelly from Fairbanks. And some of the policy background for this bill, for example, in Juneau, there's roughly 10% of the population, or about more than 3,000 people in Juneau, are legal aliens. There's a huge number of people here from the Philippines, from Tonga, and I've also learned, and it's because of the work, just becoming a member of the legislature and going around and trying to meet every single person who votes, what a huge impact they have on the economy. Many of them have two or three jobs. You probably know in your own districts how hard so many people from the Philippines and Tonga and other places in the world work. And they come here to really fulfill what I think is the American dream, to work in a place with freedom, without government intervention, to put food on the table and to raise their families. And they work incredibly hard. And it's something that it had a profound effect on me, really, because I think people should be able to work in freedom. But we all know we've also become a society that's been incredibly burdened by government paperwork and bureaucracy. And a lot of times people that come from other countries to this country have a concern about going to the government, because it's the governments that have oppressed them in their own countries that have made them concerned about going to the government here, because they feel they may get in trouble, or it's their cultural nature not to be adversarial, or they're unfamiliar with the process of doing things. And so by establishing an Office of Citizenship Assistance, we help these legal aliens become productive citizens in ways that they may not have become without the office. Now, there is a fiscal impact from this bill, but I know those fiscal issues will have to get worked out later, but I wanted the committee to address the policy issues behind this kind of thing. And what is my intent as a sponsor of the bill, to get somebody with the Department of Labor to say, to listen to people and say, well, you're having trouble with this form or this office or that office. Well, you should get this form. You should go there. You have to do this. You have to go do this. And just, you know what it's like just being a person who, you know, was born and raised in the United States, how difficult it is to work yourself through the morass of bureaucracy. Imagine if coming into the United States, you can't, English is a second language, or, you know, you're already, say, feel intimidated by the government's oppressive nature in your own country, to come in and say, can you help me do this, or can you help me fill out the form, or if I'm not doing this right, where do I have to go? And we all know what it's like to get a runaround. And this would not only help those people do these things, they would provide policy assistance and direction to the commissioner or the commissioner's designee in the department to say, you know, we have these bureaucratic or policy impediments to people trying to just simply work here. Maybe we should take a look at doing X, you know, streamlining this paperwork or doing away with this division, or this is redundant or this is unnecessary. And that also is the intent to maybe what will help increase employment opportunities for legal aliens and those who want to do business here and work. And so that's essentially where I'm coming from in introducing the legislation.
Great. Thanks, Representative Wyrock. We'll first go to questions to you, and then we have three individuals in the audience that wish to testify, it looks like, in support of the bill. then one interested party from Anchorage by teleconference. Representative Gatto for the sponsor.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. How does it affect, I don't want to say illegal aliens, but but aliens who currently are working here?
How would it affect if they're not legally in the country?
I guess I would have to, yeah, say that because you, in here, in the sponsor statement, it talks about naturalized citizens and citizen candidates, and we know there are groups outside of those two definitions.
Well, until somebody's, say, on the deportation track, until somebody's declared illegal, I think that they would have to, they may be in the position of saying, you know, I'm here lawfully, I'm here legally, I'm in the process of getting my papers to be a legal resident, and therefore I need this kind of help. I don't think the office would be in the position of trying to assist someone who may be deemed an mm-hmm. undesirable alien, skirt the system to become a legal alien, if that's what you're behind your question.
Follow up. It's only here to assist people who ask for help.
That's correct.
And I tell you, it came from the idea of when the cruise ship dock, we have lots of people who certainly are not interested in becoming citizens, and what if one of them walked off the ship and asked for, wants to work here?
Yeah, well, into America. There may be unintended consequences too, I suppose, like anything else, but if somebody here, it's intended to help that person, but if the model of how that person could be helped could help other people, by the way, then that would be part of the job's position to advise the commissioner of what to do that might help somebody else mm-hmm. down the line. If your hypothetical is somebody who is an illegal alien comes off the cruise ship and says, I need a job, well, I think they would have to have some sort of indicia of legal status or status within the system to become legal before the office would be out. It's not an advocacy to get individuals their legal status. It's to help them become employment and to say, you know, if you're having questions about this, this is the form you need to do. This is this agency, maybe Catholic Community Services or this legal services. You can contact them because you need a lawyer. We can't be your lawyer. We're here simply to be your guide, your guide on the way to becoming a productive citizen and a wage earner in the state, and this is what you need to do to get there.
Thank you.
Representative Lynn?
The only principal thing I see wrong with this bill is that I didn't think of it. I think I strongly favor the concept. Too often we have lumped illegal aliens and legal aliens, painted them with the same broad brush. In fact, we've demonized so many people, and I think that's very, very unfortunate because either most us or our ancestors, somebody were aliens at one time or another, and we need to remember that. I'm opposed to illegal immigration. I have no problem whatsoever with legal immigration, and I think it's something that should be done to help these people take the steps necessary, if they're otherwise qualified, to become productive citizens of the United States and of Alaska. And I congratulate you on that. Have you thought about any involvement, probably not in this piece of legislation, but with the faith-based help for these people?
No, though that's probably a good idea to bring up with the Lieutenant Governor's office, who's championing that initiative. I hadn't thought about that because I guess I looked at that more as a executive branch policy coming down as opposed to a legislative policy going up.
Well, just in summary, I think this is an excellent bill, and I'll be happy to support it.
Great. Any other questions for the sponsor, Representative Roepberg?
Hey, Mr. Chairman. Representative Weirach, could legal aliens be residents of the state of Alaska?
Could legal aliens? I think they could.
Well, are permanent fund dividends paid to resident legal aliens of the state of Alaska?
You might ask that of the next witnesses.
Well, do you have to be a citizen of the state of the United States to receive a PFD, I wonder?
I don't think there's a, well,
I think there is
a question on the form, yeah. I think, Representative Roper.
Now, should the state of Alaska be spending money to provide assistance to non-residents?
it depends, I suppose. It depends on where they are in the process of becoming residents to work here. For example, somebody could be a non-resident technically, but in the process of becoming a resident legally, in which case I think that it could be in a position to assist them to get the necessary forms to get employment and to get the necessary sort of positioning to become a wage-earning member of the state's workplace and a resident of the state.
Mr. Chairman, last. Yeah, it seems to me in my decade down here in Juneau, we've been spending a lot of time trying to make sure Alaskan residents receive employment opportunities. As you well know, constitutional provisions put up certain obstacles other than job owning and certain other requirements. So that's the primary focus of my line of questioning. I believe that. And I would like to have it verified, Mr. Chairman, if the other witnesses have any interest in it. We do pay prima facie dividends to non-U.S. citizens if they've established their requisite residency requirements in the state of Alaska, I believe. So, in other words, could the bill be modified to state that only services be provided to resident alien, legal aliens in the state of Alaska?
Well, it only takes, 30 days to become a resident, legal resident of the state, right?
Interesting proposition, yes.
So sometimes it takes somebody 30 days to have a form submitted and processed by the state, too. So by the time it takes them the process to get the form processed, they're already a legal resident. So, but you could say that, sure. I mean, there's no prohibition on just saying that. And I suppose it would tighten it to a certain degree, but I'm not sure it would tighten it much. In other words, it'd probably be form over substance, but you could certainly do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
No other questions at this time. We will hear Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a fine bill, a fine idea. And I'm glad that you mentioned in here that this is service for legal aliens to take advantage of labor unions as well. In here you state that information about how labor unions, administrative agencies, and court actions may be used to deal with claims or charges of job discrimination, illegal termination of employment, or sexual harassment and unsafe working conditions. It's only going to the union after there's a problem. I would think that you'd want to direct them to unions for employment. Because we have a lot of union hiring halls, and that's the best place I know of to direct a person that's looking for a job.
And a lot of times that's the case. You know how it is a lot of times when you're talking with people that are where English is a second language or culturally they don't know about unions or they're not there to help. The word gets out by word of mouth, and the word of mouth is highly connected around the state. They say, well, call this office. The office will say, here's a piece of paper that says where employment opportunities can be found. Union hiring halls, work job service, want ads, whatever. A lot of times they can't read that. So they have to say, well, what language can you speak? And then find an interpreter, line them up with the interpreter, read it, and then they can go on to the union hiring hall. But I think that's the kind of thing that's going to have to be crafted in at least in the development of the job underneath the direction of the commissioner. But you're right.
Please. I owe the guy an awful lot that told me at the unemployment office when I asked him how to become a construction worker. He said, look under the yellow pages under labor organizations, and about half an hour later I was an iron worker. And so just wanted to throw that out as it was a real step up in my life and could be for them as well.
Well, I don't come from that same place because I spent $25 a month getting on the hiring list to build the road out of Skagway, and I spent $25 for months and months and months and months and never got hired. So,
Representative Guttenberg, if you could talk to us about your employment history. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wait a minute, it's my turn. No, go ahead.
At least we have a partner history.
Representative Wyrock, you just touched briefly on decisions that would be made by the Office of the Commissioner, am I correct in assuming that they would also determine the job level? And since this is a state job, is this a 15, a 16, a 21 pay
that,
range and
yeah,
all those?
Yeah, it's on the record. I don't think that's been decided. There's been some earlier testimony in the previous Senate bill, but that range and step are not defined in the bill.
But just so you know, Representative Wyrock, that fiscal note, the second page, states that the employee would be an employment security analyst to range 17.
That was the department's analysis. I kept it undefined in the bill.
I understand. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. You bet, Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. Senator Wyrock, you talk about offering services for legal aliens about this job discrimination, illegal termination, unemployment, you know, a whole list of things. Do we know what happens to people who are legal aliens and get discharged for various reasons? Do they basically become, if they're in the country working without a job, they become illegal automatically?
It depends on their status through immigration, whether they are or not. And so I'd hate to address that in a broad brush because I don't know the answer. But it a lot of times depends on a case-by-case basis of their own status. They have to have a job or they're illegal or they have to maintain, you know, so I don't know the answer to the question.
And the reason for my question, Mr. Chair, is giving these people opportunities. They want to be mainstream. They want to have jobs. They want to participate in the community. They want to be a constructive part of society. If we don't give them a place or an opportunity to feel comfortable dealing with the government and knowing that this place is to redress, it will increasingly become harder. You know, my grandparents were immigrants, and I know getting people comfortable with dealing with their government is a major consideration for bringing people into society.
Sounds good. Okay, why don't we go now to testimony here. And sounds like everyone stated their support, or nobody supported lack thereof, so we probably won't have a lot of closing discussion. And we will go to local here first. And I can't pronounce the name. Kistan? There we go. You can, Rafael. Now I can read it. You can state your name. For
yeah,
the
my name is Rafael Castaños. I happen to be the advisor of the Filipino Community of Alaska. It was I who was following up this bill sometime in the year 2001 when I was discussing this with Senator Pete Kelly of Fairbanks. And that started the ball rolling on that matter. And we were quite happy that the office itself started operating sometime on the year 2002 and then onward. But we got bogged down because of the funding. Now, the usual problems that we were faced with this office ever since I came here in Alaska in 1994 is we have quite a number of Filipinos approaching us that the immigration, because there is no immigration office in Juneau. So I said, I think we have to coordinate with the Bureau of Juneau and request establishment of an immigration officer because it looks very funny. This is supposed to be the capital. But unfortunately, there's none. So whenever some of our fellow countrymen approach us, in particular myself, they receive notices from the immigration that you have to undergo fingerprinting in Anchorage or in Ketchikan. I'm sure that you have dealt with some Filipinos in your own district itself. Now, these people are earning $7, $8 an hour just to travel to Ketchikan and Anchorage, it will cost them an arm and a leg. So we have to find a way to assist them by way of contacting anybody because there was no formal organization that could act as a clearinghouse for all these problems. So at least in our own little way, without necessarily notifying the legislature or the executive branch, we were doing it by ourselves. But meanwhile, you know, some of those guys have already flown to Anchorage or Ketchikan for the fingerprint. But the problem that we were faced with is when the immigration subject them to fingerprint, after 2 months, they will get another letter and say, we cannot see your fingerprints. And you know, the amount of money that we have paid already is non-refundable. So those are the problems. But I'm sure in your respective district, this was not mentioned because we Filipinos are by nature shy. They will not tell, ma'am, will you kindly help us? You know, we don't know how to accomplish the form. If you have seen some of this immigration form, you yourself will get confused. If you approach an immigration officer and tell the person, will you kindly teach me how to accomplish this form because I'm petitioning my relative, my wife and children, they won't do that. They will tell you, why don't you go and avail yourself on an immigration lawyer?
No.
Now, as you are aware, just to talk to an immigration lawyer, the meter starts ticking. And you get, these people get... instead of talking to them directly, you know, they're worried because, you know, an immigration lawyer here, especially in America, it will cost you about $5,000 to $6,000. Now, where in the world will they get that money? So when we came up with this office, what we did, we checked also in the lower 48 states whether there is a comparable organization. And we were surprised there is none. So it's only Alaska who will, you know, will have this kind of... office, and I won't be surprised if after so many years, somebody from the lower 48 will get hold of this, and they will inquire how do you guys do it, and then they, you know, Alaska could serve as a model for all these the things there, because the office is concentrating what we envision are the legal residents. These are immigrants who eventually become citizens of this country. They have all kinds of problems, but in our own little way, we try to help them out. So when I mentioned this thing to Senator Pete Kelly immediately, he said, it's a nice idea, and I will clear it with the caucus. And then he approached us, okay, it's go. And everybody was very relieved. As a matter of fact, the Catholic Social Services of Anchorage wanted, you know, to join us there because they were handling those aliens that entered the country illegally and so on. But we mentioned to them that we are more or less focused on those immigrants, the legal immigrants like myself and those who became eventually citizens. It proves to be very, very effective. At least we are doing the state a favor by helping our own fellow men.
Rafael, what I'm going to say is I think there's support unanimous on the committee. I won't speak for the committee, but your testimony is important, and what I'm going to ask is you can stand by. Are there any questions for him at this stage? Or I'm going to try to, so we don't run out of time, I'm going to go to the other two folks in the committee, in the committee room, and then go to online, and then I think we support the bill. So any questions? None at this time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Important testimony. And using examples of other states is important, I think, for this, that there are other states that have this. Next, we have Christina. Is it? And I bet you will say your last name so eloquently.
Somingue.
There we go. I would have heard it, not done it justice. Welcome.
Same thing what Rafi said.
Okay.
We just need a little office or something that we can talk to in person. Because sometimes, you know, when we need a problem, we call Connie. And we said, we need help, Connie. And she was nice enough for us to, you know, to help.
And you need more than that. Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any questions?
And that's all I can say.
No, you're very kind to come and wait and testify. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
Thank
and
you.
Last one is Concesa.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Concesa Cabregas. I just arrived, you know, this December last year.
Oh.
And Christina accompanied me coming here, and I just want to say the people of Juno, I'm very happy. I'm following Christina. Thank you for being here.
Okay. And you support the bill?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you so much for everyone.
Okay, you bet. I hope we have an office for you soon here. Okay, No other folks in the audience that want to testify on this? Then we'll go to Andre McLeod. And Andre, if you could keep it, because we're short on time, the 2 minutes, that would be great on House Bill 379.
I'd love to keep it to 2 minutes, but I'd like to have the whole thing said. I mean, I'm the only one left here, so. I'm against HB 379 for the reasons already stated when a version of this bill's concept was last before the State Affairs Committee on March 31st, 2001. A fiscal note is not attached to HB 379. Further clarification on the number of people and the amount of money it would take to fund this Office of Citizenship Assistance would be greatly appreciated. As I testified 3 years ago, the American dream includes interfacing with government, and it is always problematic. Whether you're an alien or not, or a citizen, or if you're not a citizen, it's problematic, and the American dream includes it. If anyone has any discrimination problems, they go to the Human Rights Commission. You have problems with INS, you go to INS. If you have any other problems with government, you go to the Ombudsman's Office. According to the sponsor statement, people who are actively pursuing U.S. citizenship could receive help navigating through state employment and federal immigration agencies. That policy alone would be discriminatory based on national origin. I applaud the intent of underlying the rich history of immigration in Alaska, but it doesn't have to be done at our expense. As far as bridging the transition of adjustment, the INS process provides for that by making sure people coming here are sponsored by someone. That sponsor carries the responsibility to bridge the transition. Also, immigrants should not and must not be treated as victims of circumstance. They've already shown a strong sense of responsibility by taking the steps necessary to leaving their homelands. And it's that responsibility that needs to be encouraged instead of enabling a system allowing people to make excuses. In closing, this is a federal issue, and our scarce state resources cannot and should not be spent on this. It could be better spent. And if it helps anybody to know anything, I am an immigrant. I came to this country. We had a sponsor. It was Uncle Jerry, and he did everything to help our family navigate whatever needed to be navigated, and we never felt like victims.
Okay, thank you, Andre. Seeing no questions and no one interested in testifying, we'll close public testimony. What is the wish of the body? Representative Lynn?
May I move this bill?
Yes, you may.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me. I would move House Bill 379, 23LS1239/A, with recommendations and is your fiscal note there?
Attached
fiscal note.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
any objection, Representative Roper?
For the purpose of discussion, I'd just like to say that if the state can find $112,000 for employment opportunities, I think I might rather be putting that money in rural Alaska to put in the hardcore unemployment areas of the state. But there is certainly some merit to this bill. I'm not sure we can afford it, but given that, I would remove my objection.
Okay, and I would just say that I know in East Anchorage there are a number of Filipinos and Hispanics and others who have moved in, and I definitely support the bill. I understand your concern of where the money goes, certainly, but I plan on co-sponsoring the bill. Hearing no other objection, thank you, Representative Lynn, for the motion, and so moved. Click. So the next bill is Senate Bill 291, Unstamped Cigarettes, Senate Labor and Commerce, and I saw Senator Mundy coming, so we'll take a brief at ease till he arrives. House Labor and Commerce, and thanks for the courtesy. Senator Mundy is here for Senate Bill 291. He can come down and explain his bill. Welcome, fellow Labor and Commerce Chair, from the other body.
Us Leos got to stick together.
We have the same birthday, for the record.
Yeah, same year, too.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not going to.
67.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Committee members, appreciate you taking up SB 291 on stamped cigarettes. This is probably a good illustration of why we have a legislature and we don't put all our laws in the Constitution, because things change that are unforeseen. What happened way back when we passed the cigarette tax, and there turned out there was a bit of a gray market that was established, and in order to help us enforce our Alaska law on cigarette taxes, we needed to establish a stamping procedure so that cigarettes sold in Alaska were stamped. We passed this bill last year with your help, and then unforeseen circumstances arose, and that is the tobacco manufacturers, cigarette manufacturers, used to have a very liberal return policy. Apparently, any unsold stock could have been returned for full credit. For whatever reason, they chose not to do that any longer. We had a reasonable deadline in the bill, which was by March 31st, all unstamped cigarettes should have been sold. It turns out that they're not able to sell their back, their rearage, if you will, their stock, and they won't be able to return them to the manufacturer. And it certainly wasn't the intent of this legislation to cause a loss for those retailers. So what we've done in this bill is extend to June 30th the deadline for selling unstamped cigarettes in Alaska. This certainly should have be ample time for retailers to dispose of all their previously purchased cigarettes that were unstamped, and then after that we can move forward with the new law that requires stamps so that, and enforcement of Alaska's tax laws. That, in a nutshell, is SB 291. If I
Thanks,
address Senator. Questions you might have.
Thanks, Senator Bundy. I see Jan's Distributing, who I've worked with, Bobby Scott, lives in my district, supports the bill, and also Northern Sales, Mike Ellerding, and then it looks like Department of Revenue, Steve Porter, they support the bill. And actually, Mike Ellerding and Joanna Bales from Department of Revenue, if they could be brief, they're online to support it. But we'll go to questions first. Representative Dahlstrom, then Roper.
I'll pass.
Okay, Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bundy, so this is actually be able to sell off any unsold inventory that's not stamped before this date. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Couldn't we hire some Matt Valley gerbils to stamp these little packs or provide employment for the rat pack?
I'll object on behalf of Representative Gatto.
These
gerbil Gatto.
Might end up in a skit.
Mr. Chairman, no.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
There may be a labor problem with that anyway.
Okay. You know. No other questions?
Animal Labor Act.
Okay. There are no other questions. Let's go to folks testifying here to make sure we don't need to delay this too long. Mike Ellerding, Northern Sales, welcome.
Thank you, Representative Anderson and Chairman Anderson. Members of the committee, my name is Mike Ellerding. I am the owner of Northern Sales Company of Alaska. We're a wholesale distributor operating in Southeast Alaska, and we sell primarily tobacco products. We support the passage of Senate Bill 291, and I will be brief since I know you have other pressing business. Just make a couple comments. Last year, the passage of Senate Bill 168 required all cigarettes imported into the state to possess a tobacco stamp on each carton of cigarettes. The effective date of the Senate Bill 168 was January 1st, and there was a 90-day transition period, as Senator Bundy pointed out, through March 31st to phase in the conversion from stamped to unstamped inventory. The effective March 31st, it's going to be illegal for retailers to, or anyone, to possess unstamped cigarettes. But unfortunately, there are still a lot of unstamped inventory at retail, which creates a problem. And Senator Bundy said the primary reason the initial 90 days didn't go through was because of a change that the manufacturers implemented after we'd already passed Senate Bill 168. So without the legislature's action, we're going to have a number of retailers in the state who are find themselves in possession of illegal cigarettes that would be subject to seizure, and as a result, they could suffer a severe financial loss from this. The easy and correct way to fix this would be to extend the date from March 31st to June 30th, as Senator Bundy has done in Senate Bill 291, and we urge and request that the House pass this Senate Bill 291. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. We have your written testimony in our binder here. Any questions? Seeing none. Joanna Bales, do you still want to testify? We do have your written support of the bill.
Yeah, I mean, just a quick, for the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the program manager for the Cigarette and Tobacco Products Tax.
with the Department of Revenue. And basically, we received over 50, probably close to now 100 calls from retailers who are very concerned because of the change in the manufacturer's policy. So you do have the written testimony, but I guess, you know, in a way I'm testifying for those 100 retailers across the state who've called us and are hoping for the passage of this legislation.
Thanks, Joanna.
So, yeah, if you have any questions, I'm available.
Okay, are there any questions?
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what would happen? I mean, I realize that we're getting pretty close here. If all of them are going to be illegal on March 31st and we don't get this passed and signed, what happens to the cigarettes that are in the interim between the time this goes into effect?
Yes, Representative Crawford, through the chair, that's an excellent question, and actually I will be meeting with the governor's office tomorrow to discuss this. You know, if there's legislation that's pending and it's pretty much agreed that everyone in the state realizes that we need this, I mean, I guess our thoughts on that would be that we suspend enforcement until we're sure that we are doing what the legislature would like us to do.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Senator Running.
If there wasn't clear legislative intent, however, law would require that those that product that was not stamped, purchased before this law went into effect, would have to be confiscated.
Okay, so there's that threat. Any other questions? Representative Roper?
Yeah, through the chair. Senator, does this bill notice pending referral of finance, do you know, or? We have to have it.
That I
am getting a head shake. It looks like it
affirmative.
My expanded memory responding.
Well, the Rules Committee will make sure it has expedited calendaring in order to try to make the 31st.
Senator Bundy's asking for all of his legislation or just this? Okay. Well, let me close the testimony. So now, if you want to have wrap up, and we'll finish your bill.
There are those who would probably think that I would just as soon have all that product confiscated, but it is unfair to retailers who tried to comply to the law with all the best intentions and cannot, and so I commend it to your judgment.
Senator Representative Roper?
Never let it be said that Senator Bundy isn't fair and even-handed and balanced in his approach to legislation.
In that particular case.
With that, I move Senate Bill
261
with individual recommendations in the attacks, zero or other fiscal notes.
Any objection? No objection, Senator Bundy. So that bill is moved, and thank you.
Senate Labor and Commerce will have to take lessons on how to do business efficiently.
Hey, no, I learned from you.
Thank you.
Good okay. bill.
We'll go next to, bless you, to Senate House Bill 449. Aid of bonds for gas public utilities. Representative Harris has a representative. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. State your name and affiliation. The record.
For the record, my name is Pete Feldman. I'm staff for Representative Harris. House Bill 449 was submitted by Representative Harris upon request from the Alaska Intrastate Gas Company. I'm not actually here to speak to the bill or present the bill. I believe we have a spokesman from the Intrastate Gas Company online who would like to address this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. And I don't see my staff, so this is Chairman Anderson. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, that would be wonderful.
Yes, my name is Paul Rizanowski. I am Vice President of Alaska Intrastate Gas Company, and I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 449. I'll keep it brief for your agenda today. The bill addresses a requirement under AS 44.88.095G in which the legislature must approve a project over $10 million in cost before ADA can consider the program under the Development Finance Program. This project in its entirety encompasses 17 communities and would cost in excess of $100 million. ADA considers each of the communities as part of the total project. So whether the cost for a community is less than $10 million or not, the project itself dictates their ability to consider the community under the development finance program. What we seek with this legislation is an opportunity to broaden the financial opportunities for communities so that individually they might be able to work with both Alaska Interstate Gas Company and ADA to be considered under the Development Finance Program for financing utility infrastructure in that community if that represents the most favorable approach to developing utility services in that community. At the present time, Alaska Interstate Gas Company has reached agreement with ADA to proceed with conduit financing for initiating the project. So this is not a program that would be considered by Alaska Interstate Gas Company right now, and we are presently working with a financial institution to seek a bond placement this summer to initiate the project. The bill also provides a sunset date for the bonding authority so that it would not continue in perpetuity, but it would terminate within a few years after passage. The project itself would result in employment of excess of 200 people throughout Southeast Alaska, generate more than 50 permanent jobs in these communities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'll be glad to answer any questions from the committee.
Thanks, Paul. And I see Julian Magden. I don't know if that's how to pronounce the name. Is that individual, they don't want to testify, correct? They're just there for answers?
Yes. Julian Magden, and I'm present. Just,
okay, good.
Just to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. And you're with Alaska Interstate Gas as well. Okay, so any questions for Paul at this time? Representative Roquefort.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, nice to hear from you. You said you have an agreement with ADA regarding the conduit revenue bonds?
Yes, that's a verbal agreement. We agreed on the pathway to proceed, and we're working now on developing a bond placement that would utilize conduit financing.
Well, through the chair, Mr. Wisnowski, have you seen the letter of February 18th, 04 regarding this? Representative Harris, that says that, that if you use the conduit revenue bond program, it does not require legislative authorization. Is that how you understand it?
Through the chair, that is correct, and we are not seeking authorization for ourselves at this time for this program.
Mr. And what's the purpose of the bill then? I'm not sure I get it.
Through the chair, the purpose of the bill is to provide this mechanism as available to communities as we develop past the initial phase, that if the community wished to proceed along this path, they would be able to be considered by ADA in future financings of the project. The initial financing will cover Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka, which we intend to do with conduit financing. Down the road, there may be better financial opportunities for communities to consider, and because of the fact that they're part of a larger project, they would not be able to look at the development finance program for any potential financing.
Follow-up, Representative Roquefort?
Well, would those communities then use the conduit taxable bond program through ADA, or would they... Is that what we're authorizing here?
Through the chair, what you'd be authorizing is for this project to be considered under the development finance program if it meets the investment criteria and feasibility, et cetera, that ADA would require. However, the project will be initiated without the use of this program or consideration from this program through conduit financing. So in the future, the only consideration that would be occurring would be for some of the communities if they chose that they would like to proceed this way, or the financing mechanism through this program was more favorable than what we could provide outside of this program, then it might be of interest to the communities to utilize it in conjunction with ourselves.
So, Paul, this is Chairman Anderson, so let's take it,
this logical progression. Let's reverse the question. If the bill doesn't pass, what can't these communities receive? I think that's what Representative Roper's getting at. If this doesn't pass through the legislature this session, what's the adverse effect?
Well, the adverse effect is that it just eliminates one potential mechanism for financing infrastructure within the community that might be more favorable to the community in reducing the cost of service.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Paul. We'll have you stay online in case there's more technical questions. We'll go to teleconference after we go to folks in the conference room here. And first we have Don Etheridge, then Bob Loescher. You know the drill.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Once before. Don Etheridge with the AFL-CIO and the local laborers who are hoping to be part of putting this project together and hoping to get it going here. We're here to speak in favor of this piece of legislation in order to get out to the other communities in a more expedient and cheaper way of doing things. And we're definitely in support of it, and we're in support of the jobs it's going to create for the installation and the overall jobs that will be there when the project completed, just in taking care of it and making sure things were on right.
Great. So Labor endorses this, it sounds like. AFL-CIO, are there any questions? Okay. Thanks, Don. And Bob? Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Loescher. I formerly was with the ADA Board of Directors, so I have about 6 years, 7 years experience on that board, and also as a former CEO for Sea Alaska Corporation. This project came to me as an investment project about 7 years ago. And then I represent a number of interests in the coastal communities that are very interested in this project. And Mr. Chairman, I won't speak to the details of the bill, but I'll speak to the need. Right now, the cost of fuel is going up, diesel fuel, and that powers the generators for electrical generation in our communities. The cost of power in our communities in Southeast, in the coastal communities, is about 33 cents. Kilowatt hour, and that's extremely high. And I know this project, the way the bill is constructed, will focus on Ketchikan, Sitka, and Juneau, but there are a number of communities that will want to take this opportunity to participate as the projects go forward and as legislation enables to participate with this company to get these communities with pipelines in the communities, Huna being a particular community that I'm interested in right now. We could reduce the cost of power or fuels 50% from diesel fuel, and that would help our economic development tremendously and also help the people who reside in this community tremendously, because they're paying anywhere from $1.40 to $1.80 a gallon for diesel fuel right now. And we, after CNN's report this morning of $1.85 average for gasoline prices across America, somebody's saying to me it could go to $2 or $3 this summer just for gasoline, and we, in the parallel price for diesel fuel, it goes up similarly. So we could be looking at anywhere from $2 to $3.50 a gallon in our coastal communities for diesel fuel in no time flat. And this is a major problem. But it, just to conclude my remarks, Mr. Chairman, this project for Southeast Alaska would access Canadian propane air right now. And as Alaska Gas Line sources develop over the next 20 years, we could access Alaska gas and bring it to our region. And so we, the people I represent, strongly endorse this bill. and I'm sure in the future you'll be seeing further amendments. I'm not aware, when I was on the ADA board, any project that exceeded $10 million required a legislative oversight, because it not only affects, you know, the public policy dealing with large amount of bonds being sold, but it affects other bond capacity in the state, whether it's state bonds or municipal bonds and whatever. But I haven't seen that Attorney General's opinion regarding that matter. So if it is a blessing, if it doesn't require it, but I believe that the legislature should be concerned about anybody selling bonds in Alaska, because it affects the whole basket of bond capacity for the state, private or public. I endorse the project.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions, Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. Mr. Lorsch, the number in here is $76 million. Do you know where that comes from?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not familiar with the details today, but when it first started off, just for Sitka, Juneau, and Ketchikan, they were estimating about a $70 million worth of projects, and I think they may be adding on communities as they go now, and I think that's why that number increases.
Any other questions? Seeing, hearing none. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate you coming. We have just a few more people. Jim McMillan online from ADA.
Jim McMillan. I'm Deputy Director of Credit and Business Development for Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on this bill. I'm not here to testify for or against the project. I am here to testify to the fact that this bill is not necessary. The reason I say that is because, as has been alluded to earlier, what this bill does is authorize ADA to issue bonds not to exceed $76 million for financing the subject project under the authority's development finance program. That program is commonly referred to as our own and operate program. The chairman and committee members may be familiar, of course, with the Red Dog project, which is financial assistance was provided under the development finance program, where the authority actually owns port and the road and operates it through a third-party agreement with Tech Cominco. Another example of a project under the development finance program is the Federal Express maintenance hangar here in Anchorage. Once again, the authority owns that project and operates it through a third-party agreement with FedEx. Normally, we look at the development finance program for financial assistance for those projects where ownership of the assets will actually bring a benefit to the project. That most commonly occurs when government ownership is required in order to qualify for tax-exempt bonds, which does lower the cost of financing. We've been acquainted with this project for approximately 5 years now, and we have indicated to the project developer on many occasions, at least twice in writing, 1999 and 2001, that this project, we do understand that the overall project takes in consideration many communities, does not really fit within the development finance program. That our ownership of the assets under that program brings no additional benefit to the project. In fact, it may bring some additional hurdles in terms of time and cost to go through the process that's required to get to approval of a project under the development finance program. We also determined initially that this project does not qualify for tax-exempt financing. Therefore, there is no necessity for the authority, a public corporation, to own the assets. Once again, it does not bring any benefit to the table. I want to clarify a couple of comments that Mr. Ruzanowski made. He made the comment that this authorization is needed, not necessarily because of the first three communities, but the additional communities. And the way the authority would look at this is the total cost of the project and not the financing for one of the smaller communities. That is not correct. The statute requires approval of issuance of bonds under the development finance program in the face amount of the issue of the bonds issued by the authority exceeds $10 million. It has really no relationship to the total project cost. So that is not really a correct statement. Krasinowski also stated that there is an agreement with ADA to issue conduit bonds for the initial portion of this project. I want to clarify that we have indicated to Alaska Interstate Gas that the conduit revenue bond program, issuance of taxable bonds, appears to be the program that fits best for the type of financing, type of project that they're undertaking. But that requires, first of all, an underwriter or someone to purchase the bonds, and due diligence and an underwriting analysis. And we really haven't concluded any of those points to move forward and have an agreement on issuance of conduit bonds. So that's the extent of my testimony, Mr. Chairman, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Thanks, Mr. McMillan. Are there questions from the committee? Representative
Roper? So, Mr. Miller, is if the AIGC does find an underwriter and they do their due diligence and are prepared to provide financing, they merely have to apply to ADA for the conduit financing? Is that what you're suggesting?
Representative Roper, through the chair, if they can find an underwriter and someone to purchase the bonds, then we would give consideration to financial assistance under the conduit revenue bond. Would merely need to come back to us. I might clarify that conduit revenue bonds, when they are issued by the authority, that neither the asset nor the credit authority are at risk in the issuance of these bonds. However, potentially our name and ability, since our name is on these bonds as the issuer, our ability to enter into the market again could be adversely affected if there is a default on these bonds. So while finding someone to purchase the bonds is an important first step, we also want to do our own independent due diligence and analysis, make sure that there's a reasonable success of the payment of these bonds.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Miller, if in fact you were to approve the conduit bond program for this project or portions thereof, what kind of a savings generally would you expect because of the imprimatur of ADA on the bond? How many basis points are they going to save in financing over the average of the tranches?
Representative Roper, through the chair, let me answer that in two parts. We're talking about a taxable bond issue, and the rule of thumb, and I emphasize it's only a rule of thumb, is that if the project qualified for tax exempt and ADA issued tax exempt bonds, that the savings could be up to 200 basis points or 2%. If the project is financed with taxable bonds, really, the only thing that ADA brings to the table is our entrance into the market on a periodic basis, and the fact that potential purchasers, because they know of ADA's role in being in the market, might take a look at the project. It will not bring any benefit in terms of a savings on the coupon on the bonds themselves.
So that's your answer. So your testimony is that your organization may take on additional risk with the potentiality of default and not be able to save any money in terms of the marketability of the bonds themselves. Is that correct?
Representative Roberg, through the chair, the ability to actually market those bonds, there is an enhancement that ADA brings to the table, as I mentioned earlier, and it's the fact that people are familiar with ADA and the types of projects that we support and sponsor. So that will probably get a look-see from a potential purchaser, whereas if AIGC was issuing corporate bonds, a company that's not known in the market, it might just hit the round file. But in terms of any savings on the interest rate, only the bondholders can only look to the revenues generated from the project and cannot look to ADA. So there really isn't any savings in terms of interest rate, but only the fact that it'll get a look-see by potential purchasers.
Well, let me ask. This is Chairman Anderson. Why would the chairman, I'm not being critical of your testimony, but why would the chairman of House Finance sponsor the bill then? I mean, let me ask the question. Yeah, I don't understand. I co-sponsored the bill last week, and I'm just interested in why. Maybe you can't answer that. It's rhetorical. Representative Roquet.
Well, Mr. Miller, is looking at this project, is there any way that under the IRS taxing authority and IDB bonds that you could issue some of this project under a tax-exempt basis to help it out, even to like a discrete community or something like that?
Mr. Chairman, if I may answer that, Representative Roquet, the rule of thumb for issuance of utility bonds is that the borrower must be the utility in the community, must have been the utility in the community providing that specific service as of January 1st, 1997. The conditional certificate issued by RCA is in fact to AIGC and not the communities. So it's apparent that they were not in business as of January 1st, 1997, providing the service to these communities.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one more. Does Alaska still have some IDB bond authority that's limited by the U.S. Code?
Representative Roquet, through the chair, Mr. Lozier made reference to that issue. It's called volume cap. And volume cap dictates the amount of tax-exempt bonds that a state may issue. We are one of the issuers of tax-exempt bonds. There is a limit. I believe it's this year somewhere around $250 million. But we vie for that volume cap on tax exempt along with other organizations such as Alaska Housing, the Student Loan Corporation, and I believe there's maybe others.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it, Jim. We'll next go to Pat Sheely, and it states there's two. We don't have enough time, I think, to pursue this farther if we go too far with public testimony. So I'm going to ask you, Pat. Are you there?
Yes, my name is Phil Sheely.
Okay, Phil Sheely. Are you in support of the bill?
Very much so. In fact, Representative Vic Coring added us as the 18th certificated community.
Okay, Phil, well, the reason I ask that question is if your other two people can default to you for the testifier, if you support the bill, then you are the last person on and we can get to a vote today. Whether committee members support or don't, I don't know, but I certainly support the bill. But if you don't want to, then we'll hold the bill over. So are you willing to defer to yourself as the one person from Seward to testify of your group there?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record and please give your testimony. Bill, go ahead. You can go ahead and testify.
Chairman?
Yeah. Are you there, Phil?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Now we can. Go ahead.
Chairman, committee members, my name is Phil Sheely, the city manager for the city of Seward. We're in support of this. By way of quick background, the city previously was working with NSTAR to provide gas service to the community.
Okay, Phil, we seem to be losing you. Bad telecom line. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, why don't you try it one more time, and if we have technical difficulty, we're going to have to defer to your statement of support, and then maybe you can send in written testimony. So
all right,
I heard that you're
you.
City manager of Seward, and you mentioned NSTAR.
Yes, sir. The city previously worked with NSTAR to provide gas service to our community, and over time, their certificate was revoked, thereby eliminating any gas service to our community. We've been working with Alaska Intrastate Gas Company. We think together a program that will provide gas service. Representative Vic Coring to add us as the 18th gated community as part of House Bill 449, and we're definitely in support of it.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Sheely? Seeing none, are there any other cities or interested parties other than those members signed up with Mr. Sheely and Seward? Okay, we'll close public testimony, and we will go to any dialogue from the committee. I don't see any, so can I have a motion, please, to move the bill?
Mr. Chairman, CS 449 version D from committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal.
Any objection? Hearing, seeing none, so moved. And I will take a brief at ease for Representative Heintz to come down so she can... aid by a nod if we have had all public testimony. Is that okay? So I think we heard them all the parties interested in testifying last meeting. Therefore, I will close public testimony. Representative Heintz, is that your understanding that no one else wants to testify? And Representative Gatto, I know you're interested in the bill. Okay, then I'll close public testimony. The bill is before us. Representative Heintz, do you have closing comments or any amendments? And then we'll get to committee member amendments.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Heintz.
I'm sorry.
No, that's
fine. My couple years of German in high school. Sorry about that.
Thank you, committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your patience and steadfastness in hearing this bill. Before I wrap up, I'd like to clarify just a point that was made last week that I think for the edification of the committee. Homer Electric stated that they were not included in the process, and I've been very careful on my bill to make sure that I stayed with everyone, and I think you all have talked to everyone. So I just wanted you to know that from the beginning, which was I think at least a year ago, there's a resolution. I've given it to each of you in your packet. Supporting the authorization of a JAA, which the APA Board of Directors signed, which Homer is a member of. So I just wanted y'all to understand that everyone has been part of the process, and particularly I've been diligent in talking to everyone to make sure we try to put forward a good piece of legislation. I want to clarify, it seems like things have gotten just a little bit muddled, so I want to clarify the intent of House Bill 453. It does not form a JAA. A joint action agency was put in Alaska statute in 2001. The JAA allows utilities to form a partnership to build generation and transmission facilities. House Bill 453 offers a tool to ensure that the JAA, formed by the Rail Belt Utilities, has access to the lowest interest rates for borrowed capital to finance high cost of infrastructure projects like replacement, operation, maintenance of our aging rail belt electrical system, which I think all of you know from the first time I was here and I had the big map that is a problem to the entire state of Alaska. When utilities borrow money, the cost of that money is passed to the ratepayers, all the ratepayers in the rail belt. Last week we heard Chris Field testify that regulatory uncertainty causes higher rates on borrowed capital. And that's very, very important. That is basically the reason for this bill. Ms. Phil has helped finance over $8 billion worth of public utility projects, such as this project before us. In your packets, and I've put in the International Rating Agency reported that regulatory environment creates uncertainty, thereby raising interest rates to rail belt borrowers. Thereby, that money that's borrowed, the higher rate will trickle down. All that HB 453 does is allow certainty by exempting wholesale agreements by the JAA from rate regulation. With lowered interest rates, the rail belt utilities will be paying the lowest possible price for their wholesale purchase of electricity, and the savings trickle down from Fairbanks to Homer.
As an example, the Four Dam Pool JAA has a proven record of providing low-cost, affordable power to its members. House Bill 453 will give the same benefits to the ratepayers in the rail bill. I've worked diligently on this bill. I thank you for your insight. I ask for your support and look forward to your vote.
Okay, Representative Hines, before we get into debate in the committee, are there any amendments you wish one of the committee members to propose, since you can't?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Gatto, I believe, has an amendment.
Okay.
I'll move amendment number one, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and I'll object so you can explain it.
Where is it?
You have a copy?
Yeah.
We want to make sure everyone has a copy. I know that it was handed out, but we'll hand it out one more time.
Yeah,
we'll take a brief at ease until it's located.
I was probably the most vocal opponent to this bill. However, for the record, Cheryl, Representative Hines and I talked outside, and we kind of agreed that this amendment would satisfy everyone, and I think with these amendments passed, I could support it.
Okay.
Amendment number one, as written, is in following the word agencies, page one, line two, insert two public utilities that are parties to the agency agreement, including certain electric cooperatives.
Okay, so that's a title change. And then continue on the amendment.
And page 2, line 8, following the word utilities, insert or electric cooperatives, each of whom is a party to the agency agreement.
And my guess is you did this on behalf of your constituent, MEA. Could you explain what the amendment will do?
This essentially will allow any utility not a member of the joint action agency to remain regulated in both, and for clarity, in both directions, both with regard to the amount they charge and with the amount they would pay. So as long as they are not joining with the JAA, they are maintain the regulation under the RCA.
Okay, and Representative Gatto, is it your presumption that the adverse parties to this originally, like MEA and Homer Electric and Seward, would support this presumption?
I presume. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, it's good
I like
to know
the word
because
presumption.
We've closed public
yeah.
testimony. Yes. Okay. Any questions for Representative Gatto? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I I'm trying to understand this. So does this mean that if a power agreement that's sold between, say, Chugach to MEA will still be regulated, but if Chugach sells power to MLMP, it won't be regulated because they'll be members
part
of the
JAA. Correct.
Of the JAA.
Okay, so. And Representative Crawford, would the sponsor or her representative like to answer that, or is that sufficient, what Representative Gatto stated?
I think that's sufficient.
I think that is sufficient.
Is there any other question for the maker of the amendment? Representative Roper.
Yeah, Representative Gatto, is this an opt-out provision, or is it automatic?
It's automatic. Good point. Until you join the JAA, you're not a member, and you simply remain subject to the RCA.
So the net effect is you could be receiving wholesale power from the JAA, but you would still be a regulated. That portion of the contract or that agreement
that
between would still be subject to the RCA oversight and regulation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, I'll remove my objection. Are there any other objections? Seeing, hearing none, Amendment 1 passes unanimously. Representative Gatto.
I move Amendment number 2.
Okay, I'll object so you can explain.
What Amendment number 2, which is, let me describe, page 3, line 1, following the words, this chapter, insert as specified in AS 42.05.431, that, if you look it up in the statutes, is the power of the commission to fix rates. So it simply clarifies and identifies it more clearly than without.
Okay. Are there any questions for the maker of the motion? Representative Roper?
Yep. I'd ask the bill sponsor or representative to comment or if they have any comments on this amendment.
Representative Hines, do you support
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the Chair, Representative Rotberg, I think Representative Gatto is making this bill even better. This way it covers all the parties and I think puts to rest any feelings that maybe they might not be somehow an equal party or whatever, but I think it makes the bill even better.
Well, it sounds like it's a Gatto-Hines amendment.
It is.
Josh, hit Taylor's You've Got a Friend.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Representative Rutberg.
Well, so this is in the rubric of this is making a is this making a good bill better or a bad bill worse or no? Okay.
Well, I think a good bill better. Okay. Assume the sponsor's going
to
respond.
Just to make sure that's clear, right? Yeah.
Okay. I will remove my objection. Well, no need to. Okay. And see no other objection. Amendment 2 is adopted unanimously. Any other amendments?
Mr. Chairman, I have some notes here on line page 1, line 1, words 3 and 4, the words exempting from. I have this comment on my pages here that's crossed that out and says relating to. Did I miss something? Did we do that as a conceptual amendment or?
No, we did not.
Is that the...
Let me ask the sponsor, is that something you'd like, or are we okay with the bill? And I'll look to her reps. Is that needed?
I'm not familiar with this.
An act relating to rather than exempting? I don't think...
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Roperg?
That really widens the title up really widely if you do that.
So yeah. I would recommend you not make that change, Representative Gatto. And the sponsor's content, are you? Not make that motion.
I'm okay with it. I just had my notes and I said, what happened here?
That was wishful thinking. Yeah.
It might
hurt you.
Okay, any other amendments? Seeing, hearing none, could I have a motion to move the bill out of committee? I'll move the bill. House Bill 453 as amended.
Version A
is amended with individual recommendations and I assume zero fiscal note. Hearing, seeing no objection, so moved. And I wish we could get to the other bill. I've already postponed it, and we only have 6 minutes left before caucus, so we will adjourn and see you at 3:15 on Wednesday. Thank you.